Welcome to Failing Forward. Have a really exciting guest for everybody today. CD, can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. I'm CD Glenn. I'm the president of the PepsiCo Foundation and the global head of social impact for PepsiCo, the company.
Tell us just a little bit about the work you do at PepsiCo Foundation.
So I have what I talk about as the privilege and the pressure of helping this company that makes great products and products that many of the listeners will know, and they'll automatically hear the name and they'll think about the name on the door and they'll say Pepsi. Oh, it's a soda company. But we're so much more than that. Even on the drink side, we own great brands like Gatorade or Aquafina or Pure Leaf Tea, or even other sodas like Mountain Dew, other carbonated drinks like Mountain Dew. But Pepsi is bigger than Pepsi, and the Co is actually bigger than the Pepsi. And that Co is really the Co and PepsiCo is really how we as a company are rooted in agriculture. So we own brands that many listeners will know, like Lay's, like Doritos. And when you hear those names, you're like, oh, I know some of those. But the reality is those products are, great and enjoyable. In moderation, as one would determine. But the reality is, those products really root us in agriculture. And they root us in agriculture because Lay's is about potatoes and Doritos is about corn. And the oatmeal that you may or may not have had this morning is about oats. And so when I think about the great products that my colleagues and friends around the world, the products that they make, the products that they move, the products that they sell, I get to think about, well, how did all that come to be? How did these products come to be? And that really is because we have a codependency, a real relationship with people and with planet. And so my job is to take the great work that we do as a company and the great products and ensure that we are thinking about and putting sustainability and human capital at the center of everything that we're doing, that we're being or operating within interplanetary boundaries, that we're being a positive force for good for people and planet as we do produce the great brands and products that I just mentioned. And so it's a privilege because we are scale. We have scale, we have size, we have over 300,000 employees. We sell products in over 200 markets around the world. We have, great brand loyalty with consumers, and all that is a privilege. It's a privilege to leverage that. But the pressure is, how do we make sure with that scale and that size and that network of people that we engage with, how are we doing more good for more people? How are we really showing up and being responsible? How are we making sure that what we're driving is leading to a greater good beyond the consumption of these great products that we're making? And so, as I talk about Lay's being about potatoes or Doritos being about corn or Quaker or oatmeal being about oats, it's about potato farmers. It's about corn growers. It's about those who are sowing the seeds for great oats. And so that link to people who grow and people who are on the front lines of producing the products that allow our company to survive, adapt, and thrive in a changing climatic situation, that's what I have to make sure we think about and think through as a company. And so that leads the mission and the mandate of the PepsiCo Foundation to be really focusing on what we talk about, feeding potential of people to, again, thrive, the planet to thrive. And thrive is such a really powerful word sometimes, because you can't really say it without like smiling or something. Like if I said, hey, how you doing today? I'm thriving. You're going to smile. You're like, wow, that guy has a lot of energy. He's thriving. And so if we're committed to feeding the potential of people and communities to really thrive, we're giving back as much as we gain from those natural resources. We're giving back and we're gaining as much as we can from the smallholder farmers and the large farmers that are producing the great crops that we source. We source over 35 different crops from 60 countries around the world. And that's a real dependency, again, on people and planet. And so, when I talk about this pressure and the privilege because of the size of the scale, because it's a big important company in the sense that we're the US largest food and beverage company, second largest food and beverage company in the world. But there's pressure because, hey, all right, that's fine. What are you doing for people and planet? How are you showing up beyond your products? How are you giving back and taking us to a new level when we think about food system transformation? So that's what drives me. You know, I get to feel this pressure because I have the privilege of being in this company that is 100% committed to being a positive agent for change, a positive force for good for people on the planet. And we don't look for or talk about, because we haven't gotten there, we failed because we're not perfect. The journey is just as important. And so that progress to perfection, that progress to that pathway to prosperity that we put many communities on, we're holding ourselves to a high standard, and we're not there, but we're on our way. And we really have, and that's why I took this job after spending 25 plus years outside of corporate America. Business, you know, has a unique role to play when I talk about being of service, creating opportunities, and have the biggest impact. I do feel like at this stage in my life and my career, I'm on the front lines, and help PepsiCo being on the front lines of business being a positive force for change, where we are taking on that responsibility as an opportunity and a duty to, again, not think about doing no harm, but how much good can we do? How much more good can we do with partners, with the social sector, with the public sector, but the private sector stepping up? And because I spent my career in the social sector and in the public sector, and I was always pushing for the private sector to take their seat at the table. Well, now I get to sit down. I get to sit down as the private sector with my old friends and colleagues in the social sector and in the public sector. And we get to think about how we are gonna, you know, together make situations better and solve really, really, really intractable problems. So that's what I do for a living, but that's what I do for life.
You work with a company that sees global food systems in a way that very few others do. You described the scale of Pepsi, 35 products, 60 countries. So few organizations see that whole spectrum. From that perspective, what are some of the biggest challenges that you see, or the biggest failures happening in the food system right now?
It's a great question. There's no silver bullet. There's no silver bullet. We're talking about silver buckshot. You know, there's a lot of things that are needed all along various value chains, and we're not going to solve all of them. But what we want to do is to work with others to make the changes that we see there. And so we want to be a real contributor to food systems transformation. We're not going to do it alone, and no one actor is going to do it alone. But we're focused on some real critical issues. You know, if you look at the data, you know, according to the UN, 2.4 billion people experience moderate or severe food insecurity, with 900 million specifically facing severe food insecurity in 2022. And that, you know, not only that, but these are crazy numbers. 3.1 billion people couldn't afford a healthy diet, and billions of people unsure where their next meal is coming from. And so when we think about these issues at a global scale, we have to also think about them at a local, about local interventions. And so part of our social license to operate as a company that is a food and beverage company, we have to think about food insecurity. Because we're making food products, like you said, or repeated, 35 different crops sourced from 60 different countries. Those crops go into to products. And so we make food products, but yet and still in the communities where we serve, there's food insecurity. We make great beverages, but yet and still, some people, they'd love to have some Gatorade, but they really want some clean water to drink, you know? And so they, you know, access to safe water. These are issues that we can do something about and that we try to drive. And we want to be catalytic in a number of our programs in our projects. And so we think about the food system in ways where we as a company can play a unique role in it. And that does start with regenerative, sustainable, inclusive agriculture. So not only how we grow crops in a regenerative nature, but also who is growing crops. And that's an inclusive nature. That means we're looking at female smallholder farmers as part of the solutions. And so that's a real issue to us in terms of agriculture and farming and sustainable, regenerative, and include in an inclusive way. Issues such as safe water access And so programs that are focused around conservation, distribution, and purification, those are all elements that we can play a role in the food system in helping to change the system to, we want to be net water positive, where we put back and replenish as much water as we take out of the system and really look at circularity models. And so, and then we think about, if we're a food and beverage company that's big, when we show up, we create economic opportunities. But in those same communities where we're hiring local people or doing local sourcing or looking at, you know, contracting and supply chains, we know that there's inequality that exists in those same communities. And so how can we think about how might we be a positive force for good in terms of spurring economic opportunity, particularly for those who are underserved, particularly for women and girls, particularly for youth and certain demographics and populations that sort of need a quote unquote helping hand, not a handout, but a helping hand to put them on that pathway to prosperity, to really think about their social and economic mobility. And so the food system for us, it is about people and it is about planet. And it's also about the agriculture and how we're farming, the water in terms of how we're growing crops and also like nourishing communities. And it is about the economic development, economic opportunities that come in that food system, so that the food system is enabling people to earn a living and secure a livelihood in a really, really unique way. And so we see ourselves as an actor in that. And then the most obvious way is that we're a market. We talk about making, moving, and selling. We buy these products. We create supply chains. We enable people to sort of work with us in ways that are sustainable, that are consistent. And so even our sourcing, our procurement are also ways that we feel like we can be a more positive contributor in the food system and in the agricultural supply chains. And so, you know, solving the problems that are there around food insecurity. And we put goals. We don't just talk about this stuff in ways that are aspirational. We give ourselves targets. Business works off a lot of metrics. I think we all know that. When I was in the nonprofit world, we always just talk about accountability in business. And now that I'm here, it's true. There are some real targets. There's glide paths. There's real rigor to a lot of setting out targets and goals and meeting those. And we give ourselves goals even in the social impact space. But we don't do it alone. We do it through strategic partnerships and programs with industry peers, local organizations, with our employees around the world. They're a part of the solution. I get to have them be part of the solution in their same communities. But things like, we set a goal to increase food access for 50 million people by 2030. We have goals with nonprofit partners like CARE to support 5 million female farmers and members of their communities by, you know, 2025. So really not only thinking about the activities, thinking about the outcomes, but also really focusing on the impact, the so what. If we're successful, what will that do? So we definitely ultimately want to see food system transformation, one that enables us, as we go to 8 billion and counting on this planet, a food system that enables all of us to survive, to adapt to these climatic challenges, but also to thrive going forward. And we see PepsiCo and we see other private sector actors, but we also see the global food system in general, all of the actors coming together in ways where we all are doing our part. You know, we may not be playing a role in every single area, but we want to make sure our work is linked to others. So we're not go it alone. We talk about, we'll partner with anyone who shares our values. And this is across all the competitive landscape that you can imagine. When people hear Pepsi, they hear other names, right? They automatically say, oh, Pepsi versus somebody. We don't talk about versus. We talk about and. You know, Pepsi and PepsiCo and these other partners. Because if we're in that community, that those community members, they don't really care about how we're battling on the shelves. They want to know that they're seeing the good that we're doing in communities as collective impact. And so that's what I'd share in terms of, we want to be that contributor to food system transformation. We want to do our part through our capabilities, through our products, through our people, through our philanthropic profits. But we want to bring all of that to the table. And so that's what's different about how I lead now at the PepsiCo Foundation and our global social impact. We're not just talking about our philanthropy. We're not just talking about our charitable giving. We're talking about our capabilities as a company writ large. You don't become the U.S.'s largest food and beverage company or one of the largest in the world de facto. You've earned that. And so how do we take what we've earned in a commercial sense? How do we take that to a social sense and a social impact sense? And from the CEO down, there's strong commitment for us to really be this positive force for good, and to use our capabilities and to use our assets, our profits, philanthropic giving, our people, 300,000 plus direct employees. That's not saying the contractors, the suppliers all around the world. How are they showing up in their own communities? And then also our products. In times of challenge and stress, guess what? We have water. We have, oatmeal and Quaker bars and any number of things to really help people through those tough times. So using our products as a positive force for good as well. And so bringing all of our assets to this food system fight, we've signed up for it, and we're looking at zero hunger, and we've signed up to, we were the first private sector partner to sign up for the Zero Hunger Pledge. So we're putting our money and our momentum and mobilizing it all to drive change, in community by community, but also we know we have to do it with great partners. So it's really great work. It's collaborative. It's sometimes slow, and sometimes it's super fast. So it's never dull. That's what I can tell you.
One of the biggest challenges facing this global food system that you talked about is that inadequate support to people at the last mile, and you mentioned particularly women smallholder farmers. What are some of the ways that right now the system is failing them, and some of the things we need to do about it?
As we both know from FAO, UN Food and Agriculture Organization, women account for nearly half of all agricultural labor in developing countries. And they're often, what's failing them? They're often working without training and proper tools, whether it be actual, the seeds that they need or fertilizers or the rights to their land. And so, we've recognized this, many organizations have recognized this, but we launched the program with CARE to really try to tackle this at scale. And we put a number out there and we said we want to help 5 million female farmers and their families in any number of countries. And now we're up to almost 10 different countries working with CARE on the She Feeds the World program, which provides resources and training to help them increase their crop yields and their income. And so these programs, they right some of the wrongs where women receive access to the resources they need to increase their production, including land rights, including financing, including agricultural inputs and seeds and access to new markets and their products. I mean, fantastic story about working with potato growers in Egypt who before, were basically almost subsistent with our partnership with CARE to really help them on the agronomical practices to increase their yields, to increase their own food security, that of their families. And so now they're making enough production that they can sell. But then the question is, okay, where's the market? Who do they sell to? But guess what? Well, because you partner with the PepsiCo Foundation, female smallholder farmers, we're linked to PepsiCo. And all of a sudden, these women have the opportunity to sell what they've made, I mean, what they're making now in much more larger quantities on a consistent basis to PepsiCo. So we created what we would even call like a shared value model, where we as a company are addressing a societal need, meaning the support for female smallholder farmers. We're addressing that societal need with our corporate assets. We made philanthropic capital available, but now we're bringing our supply chain. We've created a business opportunity at the same time. And so we're looking at more and more of these models where we do leverage all of PepsiCo to drive transformational change at communities. And I think part of the problem is that oftentimes we look at a lot of these situations in isolation, and we don't, whether, all kind of donors and actors don't bring all the capabilities to bear. But, in the issue of what's holding back female smallholder farmers in general, I mean, the reality is they're often unpaid, undervalued, underinvested in, and undersupported, despite the fact that they're essential to feeding the world. And so recognizing that obvious situation has been that alone, going in with targeted programs and thinking about gender equity and agriculture, that alone is part of, again, not a silver bullet, but definitely, definitely, definitely part of the silver buckshot, because research shows that if female farmers had the same access to resources as male farmers, they could increase their yields on their farms by 20 to 30%. Same access to resources, 20 to 30% more improvement, and potentially reducing the number of hungry people, again, that issue of food insecurity around the world, by 150 million. By doing what? By just investing in women, by giving them the resources on par, at parity to men, you're looking at transformational change. So we know women are the key in our journey to reach zero hunger. And, supporting female farmers is not only vital to the communities that we serve in, it's vital to the future of our company. So this is us future-proofing our company through support for women farmers all around the world. And so it's good for society. And then, hey, at the end of the day, it's good for business.
One of the things you described that's so important is this idea of thinking about the whole company. So historically, many companies have thought just about that philanthropic piece. And what you've described is, yes, philanthropy, but also supply chains, also business models, also what are we making in the world? What does it take to get there, to move from an idea that philanthropic giving is the answer to actually we think about all of our assets? How does that happen?
I think it's a great question. And one of the answers is really more companies taking this totality of their social impact approach. And that means that companies themselves, particularly in corporate philanthropy, because, and the reason why I say that is because I actually had, the privilege to work at other foundations. And so private philanthropy, a government philanthropy, private philanthropy, yes, we're looking around the corner and we're trying to see problems of tomorrow, today, and there's some, preceding issues and de-risking future challenges. And so there is a long-term vantage point in a viewpoint in private philanthropy, but it's also pretty donor-driven, depending on who the donor is, and depending on if it's a living donor, like what they care about. So it's a little bit less sort of what I want to say, predictable, because humans are somewhat unpredictable. And so what I desire today to do, I may change tomorrow. So that's, private philanthropy. And government philanthropy, definitely, tied to elections and tied to leadership. And we've seen transformational programs, and I've had the privilege of working in past administrations in government and seen fantastic programs. And then I've seen those programs go away with next level leadership. The difference is when corporate foundations sort of get into a space, companies want to be in these communities for hundreds of years. Like, they don't want to go anywhere. There's no wrapping up business when business is good. It's only grow, 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 get bigger. And so the level of connection to community, to place-based real support, is really unique. And I say this again, having had the vantage point of other places. And what difference does that make? Well, that means that you can make a value prop. You can make a case, a business case to your leadership that if we bring the totality of our social impact, if we bring our people, if we bring our products, if we bring our profits, if we bring our capabilities in terms of our supply chain to this, it's going to keep driving business growth, and it's going to basically have us be a positive force for good to those consumers of today and those consumers of tomorrow, who then become suppliers, who become partners, who come and work for us. And so there's no downside. But the challenge is, because of doing good has historically been the separate part of doing well, and it hasn't been you do well by doing good, it hasn't stuck. It's not there. It's not in all companies. What I would say is, I'm so excited. Again, I'm new to this, even though I've been true to this for a long time. I'm new to this in that, some companies and my peers and colleagues at other companies, we're all talking about the same thing. We're all talking about leveraging the company. Yes, it's philanthropic funding, but the other assets that we bring. And so there is a movement happening in corporate philanthropy around being thinking about the totality of the social impact of the company, all of the good that the company can do and does on people and communities. And so I think we're seeing a shift. I think we're seeing, business at, whether it's, the UN system program with the SDGs, whether it's business within the COP system and COP, 26 and 27, we're seeing business show up for society in different ways. And so, and also what we're seeing in some of your listeners who are on the social impact side, who are on the philanthropic side, are, you know, should be thinking about, well, how do I go into a company and be an agent for change in that company? And I can tell you that companies are now more than ever looking for people who have that lived experience, who have that real understanding of what it takes to have transformational change in a community. And it takes the different mindsets and the different pieces from different sectors and backgrounds. And so, you know, what does it take? It takes leadership from the top. Your leader has to sort of see the long game, that you can do well by doing good, and they're not separate, they're not distinct, and that you can actually use your capabilities in a unique way that doesn't take away from the business opportunity, but creates new business opportunities. And so whether it's concepts like shared value or others, these things are catching on now in new ways, partly because, and I know I'm going long, but partly because the challenges are so enormous now, but they're also so visceral and visible. And I'm not saying it was the inflection point, but what COVID-19 showed us is that a global pandemic that is universally impactful in a negative way, it really opened up companies to sort of say, we can't actually piecemeal this. We actually have to really think about this in its totality, because it's impacting every aspect of our business, our people, their communities, our consumers, our customers, our supply chains. Everything was impacted. And some of the solutions were philanthropic. They're like, we have to jumpstart this. We have to de-risk this. We have to double down on investments in this. And so what will it take? It will take leadership from the top and then the bottom up, you know, push, but it also takes sometimes moments to turn those moments into real momentum, where business starts thinking about all that they bring to the fight for a more just, you know, transition, that they bring to the fight of addressing inequality, of addressing food insecurity. So I think the, you know, we're having it now where inside the company, we're getting the right people in the boardrooms. Society is asking for companies to do more. And communities have an expectation that you showed up to us, you showed up for us in that one time of need, and now it's an expectation. And when consumers and communities have this expectation, typically businesses try to meet them, because it's a business opportunity to meet those expectations. So now, you know, we're not just the philanthropic do-good arm of the company. The company's trying to do good, and we are maybe a catalyst for the company doing more of that. We're not a separate appendage. We're in the heart, and we're in the growth and the value conversations of the company like never before.
I'm going to ask you one last question and I'm going to steal it
Cool.
from you. Now what?
A great question and a touche. The now what is more opportunities for companies to show up and to show out, for companies to really think about, not about the risk of failure, but about the opportunity of succeeding. If you have private sector driven solutions in any of the challenges that we've discussed, or those that we haven't discussed, it turns into actually a catalyst for other companies to do the same. And so going back to this refrain of failure, you don't succeed if you don't try, right? You miss every shot you don't take. And so a lot of times companies aren't taking shots and failing by default, just because they and then they still suffer the consequences. And so, you know, the now what for PepsiCo is to continue to do more, to continue to have great partners, to double down on doing more good for more people and doing no harm. But also, I would say, you know, the models and the ways in which that we operate, we've learned from the past, and now we know. And I'd say this is a lesson for an action that everybody could take, based upon my experience and the experience that we're having at PepsiCo. It's really to seek out opportunities to solve problems. It's really to source solutions locally. It's really avoiding the tendency to be top down, but to strive to be bottom up, to be demand driven. We're demand driven, and business is demand driven almost any other way besides like social impact. You know, demand responsive. If our consumers say they want a healthier product, we're going to give you know, a baked Lay's potato chip because you don't want fried anymore. We're going to give you Pepsi Zero because you want less sugar. We're going to give you what you quote unquote demand on the commercial side. So how do we be demand responsive on the social impact side as well? And so I think that tendency now to really think about communities and consumers in a way of which we're providing a service to them through our support, which if we're providing a service, we're getting those local insights, we're getting that local knowledge. And that's what's going to help us not only do no harm, but that's what's going to have us do the most good for the most people. And that's going to have having local solutions, but on a global scale. And that's what's going to create sustainability of these efforts. And so the now what would then be, let's keep on keeping on. But the now what now is to listen to those at the communities, to really be bottom-up driven, to be, a solution provider, but those solutions have to be locally owned, community driven, and really demand responsive. And so, we kind of have the blueprint. We failed a lot in the past. To talk about the failure, we failed a lot in the past, but now we have some wins and we have a lot of learnings. We have a lot of learnings. And so how do we turn those learnings into now more action points for real implementation? And I'm excited about what we're doing at PepsiCo, what we're doing with partners like CARE, what we're doing with, more importantly, with local communities who are owning their future. And we are no longer the sage on the stage with a big checkbook. We're just a guide on the side to help drive things forward and let them own their future in a new way. And so I'm glad to be a partner. And as being a partner, it's helping me to create more opportunities for more people and to have more impact. And again, that's what's driven me my whole career: service, opportunities, and impact. And so the vehicle now is the PepsiCo Foundation. And I couldn't be happier with where we're going or who we're going with to serve people, all over this world and in communities throughout various nations. We're really showing up as a positive force for good. And again, it's a privilege and a privilege, and there's a little pressure to keep on keeping on. So that now what is challenging because you sleep, but you wake up in the morning to do more.
Thank you, CD. It's been a real privilege to have you on the call. No pressure from my end. I've just really enjoyed listening to you. Thank you so much for making the time.
Now, thank you, and thank you for your service.
To the audience, thanks so much for listening today. Stay tuned for part two, where CD reflects on some of his personal experiences and the journey that got him here.